WK540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The FDA approves the first pill designed to treat postpartum depression. CBS's Christopher Cruz with the latest.
In recent trials, the pill, taken daily for 2 weeks, significantly reduced the often crippling, sometimes life-threatening condition, which, as its name suggests, typically occurs after childbirth, but can also begin during the later stages of pregnancy. The effects of the pill lasted 4 weeks after the last dose. Until now, treatment for PPD was only available as an injection. Christopher Cruz, CBS News, Washington.
Former President Trump is in full campaign mode one day after pleading not guilty to charges related to interference in the 2020 election. CBS's Willie James Inman.
Trump says the charges against him are meant to distract him from campaigning. He posted on social media resources that would have gone into ads and rallies will now have to be spent fighting these radical left thugs in numerous courts throughout the country. The cases have done little to slow down Trump's momentum with Republican voters. He continues to gain ground against his GOP primary rivals.
Well, I think it's politically motivated, absolutely.
Campaigning in Iowa, Governor Ron DeSantis, Trump's closest opponent, attacked the government and not the former president.
Nearly 140 live rounds were fired inside of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School today as part of a civil lawsuit against a former school resource officer who did not enter the school during the 2018 shooting. CBS's Manuel Bohorquez reports.
Ballistics experts spent hours inside the school's 1200 building, shooting live rounds that would mimic the sounds heard during the 2018 mass shooting. Eerie, painful, but necessary, says Tony Montalto, whose daughter Gina was killed.
Why a reenactment?
The reenactment is an attempt to disprove the falsehoods that were mentioned during the trial of the failed deputy Scott Peterson.
Thousands of people descended on New York City's Union Square for a live streamer's hyped giveaway. NYPD Chief Jeffrey Madry says it got out of hand.
Most of it was within the park. The young people were in the park throwing objects at each other. They were dancing. They were doing a whole lot of things, but they were hurting each other as they were doing this.
People also swung objects at car windows and ran through the streets before officers got everything under control. New Orleans Saints star running back Alvin Kamara and Indianapolis Colts defensive back Chris Lammons each have been suspended for 3 regular season games by the NFL because of their involvement in a February 2022 fight in Las Vegas. Kamara's response?
It was a poor judgment on my end, and it was obviously unfortunate, and it just got to be a thing where I'm mature, take ownership of it and make better decisions going forward.
CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. For the first time in 4 years, hate crime charges have been filed in Milwaukee. 34-year-old Miracle Reed and 30-year-old Peyton Smith are accused of committing a hate crime by attacking a group of Muslim women. The incident occurred on Sunday and was captured on video and circulated on social media. Police say Reed and Smith forcibly removed the victims' headscarves and physically attacked them. State fair officials have moved up the cutoff time for teens and kids to be at the fairgrounds by themselves. To get in the fair after 5 p.m., anyone under the age of 18 must be accompanied by a parent or a guardian. Brookfield native Joe Thomas will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame tomorrow. He started his football journey playing for Brookfield Central and played professionally for the Cleveland Browns. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos, chicken on a stick, deep-fried old-fashioned? or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Mastodons and website formerly known as Twitter at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about the former guy. Number 45, our Trumpkin, kind of a cornered rat right now, kind of like a two-year-old, on the attack, doing what two-year-olds do, doing what cornered rats do. They attack, they shift blame to others, anyone, everyone but them, especially if you're seen as not loyal. And of course, the victim card. And we're going to see a lot of this. Look, this is Trump's MO. For everyone who thinks, oh, he's going to go the Harvey Weinstein route. And no. Everyone who thinks, oh, he's going to go. He's going to fight it. I have the right to do it. He's going to blame everybody else. Every lawyer who advised him. Every person. Even if he has to make people up, there will be others. And of course, it's all about him being the victim. And look, the reality, he's going to continue this, just so you know. He's going to continue doing this, kicking and screaming, like a spoiled child in a cereal aisle after mom says no. He's going to keep doing it because the base loves it. I mean, the reality is the base has been trained to, this is what they respond to, which is why he has been brilliant. Got to give him credit. He is manipulating everyone. And because of the money, because he understands what's really behind it. It has nothing to do really with him so much as it's about the money. He understands how media works. He understands that the narrative is all about getting eyeballs and ears tuning in. He gets that. And he smartly plays it before they do. Which is why every time an indictment's about to drop, he knows and he announces, I'm going to be indicted. And they're doing this to me. Because of you, because I'm standing up for you. And people, yeah, he's fighting for us. No, he's not. He's never cared about you. And the thing is we're going to see what kind of country we are in the next, year plus. Because today, again, another one of those social media posts, Trump, truthed out. I hate that frame. He posted on his personal social media platform, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. And he had underneath it the sub-truth or whatever, a welcome to the fraud squad. And he had pictures of Joe Biden, Jack Smith, you know, the Manhattan DA, Fannie Willis in Atlanta. He had all these pictures of these people on the fraud squad. And, you know, the reality is this is classic Trump. This is what he's always done. And my mind has been, I'm hoping the media handles it a whole lot differently. Because we know, here's the thing, we know is right now Trump is probably up nights scheming and plotting for revenge. You know the revenge machine is, he's dreaming up the dream gaggle of magnified lawyers. They're going to go after everyone and anyone who has ever said anything negative. There will be a new, I don't know if it'll be within the Justice Department or if it'll just be something else that they'll create if he's somehow reelected. Election stormtroopers, Trump troopers, smashing ballot boxes under the guise of election integrity. You can see this. You can see it working in his mind. There'll be a mob of revenge-focused investigators and special counsels and special prosecutors going to make Jack Smith's life a living you-know-what. Merrick Garland's going to be misery. Hillary going to go after, finally going to go after Hillary. Oh, it's going to be dreamland. And the thing is the right is spinning all this stuff. And the MAGA base is eating it up because it is exactly what they want. They want someone who's going to punish the elites. They want someone who is going to make others' lives miserable. It's what they want. It's what they fantasize about. So if Trump is actually reelected, January 20th, 2025, the Trump troopers are going to be unleashed because they're already, you know, he's dreaming this stuff up. And I should say, at least that's what I'm being told by the MAGA folks. The MAGA folks have been telling, well, actually threatening me with this kind of, Trump's gonna get everybody back. Evidently, I'm gonna be on the list of people that Trump will come after, and you know, who knows? But here's the thing: what the hope is on the right is that by if they are able to reelect Trump, and with all of this grievance that they now have, there'll be a wave of pardons. All of the Trump loyalists will be made whole. All of the election deniers, all the January 6th rioters. This is the fantasy that's being spun. It's where the energy's at. It's where the right-wing media is kind of, hyping stuff up. Now, my hope is our media will start looking at Trump as a defendant, not as the cash cow for ratings that he is. Because the reality is what's at stake here is a peaceful transfer of power. We have had for a couple hundred years a peaceful transfer of power that goes all the way back to John Adams. And I've always said he's one of my favorite presidents because he set the tone. He lost. He left. He left like a thief in the night and very angry, but he left. And that's important. That sets into motion, generations of bloodless transfers of power. It sets into motion the thing that our country has been known for. It's deeply rooted in our democratic traditions. It's deeply rooted in our constitutional principles. This framework of this peaceful transfer of power that ensures that we have long-term legal structure, that we have established rules, that everyone knows where the parameters are, and we stay with it. And Trump broke this. This is what's important to me. Trump broke all this. The idea that we have some stability and continuity. This is important stuff because the rest of the world looks at us. And more importantly, the respect for people. This idea that the elections were stolen, the people were wrong, they didn't... all of that is really angering and frustrating. Now, I do find it interesting. And the reason I say that I hope our media will, in fact, I hope they will, in fact, do what I think they should, which is ensure that he's seen as a defendant, not as a star, not as a celebrity, but as someone who is charged with very serious crimes. Now, I find it interesting that Trump was very unhappy at how the magistrate judge addressed him as Mr. Trump instead of his preferred Mr. President. And look, he should be referred to as Mr. Trump, because in this moment, I'm sorry, you're a defendant. Meanwhile, while all of this craziness is going on, you've got Jelly Bucket Joe showing up, doing the work, doing the job. Unemployment rate now down to 3.5%, added another 187,000 jobs last month. Hourly wages up 4.4% over last year. Things are moving in the right direction. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And every time I say, hey, things are going in the right direction, things aren't good. No, things aren't good for a lot of people. And we can address that. And with Jelly Bucket Joe in the White House, we've got somebody who's willing to listen. And oh, yes, move policy that will get us there. It's up to us to put people into Congress who are willing to do, I don't know, anything other than obstruct, delay, and destroy. But that's a whole nother thing, because their fantasy of a recession evidently seems to be going a little bit further away. As today, JP Morgan Chase, they have jumped on the bandwagon of big firms saying, you know what, probably not going to get the recession everyone's dreaming for. I know Republicans really wanted the recession, been talking about it, they were hoping, dreaming for it. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. And for me, again, the Trump thing is really important. It really is, because it is about who we are as a country. It is how the rest of the world views us. It is. He could have gotten away with a lot of things, in my view. The classified, I'll be completely frank. The classified documents thing, I personally, I don't care about that. I know, he had this stuff, yeah. But you know what? You get that stuff back. You yell at him, you slap him on the wrist, whatever, you move that along. But the idea, I mean, because here's the thing. This is the thing that's sacred. And this is what I've, you know, go back to eighth grade civics class. What we, the people, decide at that ballot box, the sanctity of that box. And I still remember that high school government teacher going through this and why it's so important. Because this is who we are, how we are. This is this wonderful thing of self-governance. This is this wonderful thing of ensuring that we, the people, you and me and all of us, have the ability to determine the direction of this great country and the future for our kids. To me, that's beyond individuals. That's beyond parties. That's beyond policy. It's beyond everything. That is sacrosanct. And he violated that. He violated the most simple trust. And that cannot be forgiven. I can forgive a lot. I can let sleeping dogs lie a lot. I can make the argument of, hey, you know, it's better, good for the country just to move forward, move on, get things done. But not here. Not this. I do want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got a lot to get to today. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, it doesn't matter to me. There's no backing up on this. That peaceful, that bloodless transfer of power until 2020, I got to tell you, something we can't back up on. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you?
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you? What's on your mind?
Great. Thank you for taking my call. So a couple of points. One, I share your admiration of Adams. I think all too often he gets lost to history, and many times we think about George Washington. But the fact is that Washington, despite all his great attributes, he was not one of the intellectual leaders of this country that gave birth to what we were. He was a great man, but it's not as if he was a great thinker, unlike Adams. And he and other Bostonians and people in New England were fighting the Revolutionary War years before the summer of 1776. So, yeah, I don't think he gets enough credit, but, you know, that's just my view, and I think you share that view. Having said that, I think it's also important to recognize that you're absolutely right with regard to what the Republicans were hoping to run on. You know, this, okay, the economy was supposed to fall apart, according to everybody. Well, you know, consumer confidence, according to numbers 2 weeks ago, was at a two-year high. Unemployment is supposed to be going up as the Fed attempts to check inflation. But now it's actually gone down again to a 50-year low. So GDP has been revised upward. So I can go on and on. So if the Republicans were hoping to run on the economy is faltering and Donald Trump is going to be your savior, and by the way, that's a bit of nonsensical logic. Donald Trump inherited an upward sloping economy that began under Barack Obama and Barack Obama's policies. And then all of a sudden to claim that, you know, I'm winning the game, that's like somebody handing off the ball to you with a 50-point lead in a football game and saying, wow, I'm the one winning the game in the fourth quarter. No, somebody handed you a great team and handed you a great lead. So lastly, we've got to address, and I don't know how we do this successfully, but the reality is that we're facing an epistemological crisis in this country. There was a time, for instance, when Richard Nixon faced a similar set of circumstances. People did not have the diversity and the spectrum of outlets in terms of where they get their information. But the upside of it was that most of what we got was from professional journalists and people with credentials and people who knew what they were talking about. And at some point, the entire country got the same message. Richard Nixon needs to go. He has committed crimes, and this is unquestionable. Today, in the age of social media, when a lot of people have turned away from what they call the mainstream media and it's biased and all of this, you can find all the nonsense in the world, which will explain to you the deep state and QAnon and how John F. Kennedy and Donald Trump are going to come back and save the country. I mean, and these people are voters.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you get them back to the same quarter, because those of us who, you know, might read the New York Times or watch ABC News or C-SPAN, we're on a different page than the people who are in the Alex Jones fan club of crazy. But all of us are voting, including them. And I don't know how we get them back to the table, because, quite frankly, anything we say or do simply gets folded into their conspiracy theory. So, well, Donald Trump is being prosecuted. Here's the evidence. Well, of course that's the evidence. That's the deep state manufacturing the evidence against Donald Trump.
No, he's guilty. We saw
it with these people. It's like arguing with the flat earthers.
Yeah. I tell them, just keep walking. You know, you'll figure it out. If you just keep walking, either you'll be back here at some point or I'll never see you again. But either way, you're away from me. But Steve, I appreciate the call, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good stuff. let's go to line two. We've got Kurt and Akron on line two. Kurt, how are we doing today?
Well, hello, and thank you for taking my call. I do appreciate it. Just to piggyback a little bit there, do you know how long it normally takes for a new president's policies to go into effect by any chance?
Oh, it's usually almost a year before you really get everything
months,
going. By the time you get everyone,
24 months.
What's that?
It's 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, I was going to say at least a year.
Right. So what I'm getting at is, like the last caller said, Donald Trump was living off of the Obama economy, taking credit for the Obama economy up until 2019. And if you remember, that tax scam started going into effect in 2019, and that's when things started to go downhill. Yeah, the unemployment was still low, but we were starting to get into the clutches of a recession going into 2020, even if COVID-19 hadn't accelerated that recession. So we're now seeing the effects of Joe Biden's build back better, bottom up, middle out economy that, you know, people tend to not know about because the media would rather report on Donald Trump, because as the head of CBS said back in 2016, Donald Trump may be bad for America, but he's great for CBS's ratings. And I just saw today that there's going to be signs going around the country that show Joe Biden's face where all the infrastructure projects are going to be done.
Well, about time. I've been saying that for, well.
The messaging is finally getting there. The message is finally getting out there. But what I was going to call about is the credit rating just fell for the United States because Kevin McCarthy.
Might as well be Joe. Joe, whatever.
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy. At least I didn't say Eugene McCarthy, right? Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans in the House of Representatives are screwing around again and doing nothing to the point that our credit rating was lowered. And we're probably, and I could be wrong, and you can tell me to go pound salt in the salt mines or kick rocks down the road when I say this, we're probably looking at a possible government shutdown here.
Yeah, September.
And I really hope, that the Biden administration is maybe looking at some of these old reruns of 1995 when Clinton and Dole and Gingrich had to go at it with a government shutdown. You know, if you remember, Dole and, well, I think the thing that saved this country, too, in the sense is Dole wanted that thing done quickly because he was out running for president, too, in 1996. But, you know, if you remember, they wanted to cut the Medicare, they wanted to cut the Medicaid, and Clinton basically told Gingrich, you know, I can't go along with what you want to do. I don't believe in it. I don't think it's right. And if it costs me re-election, then so be it. Of course, you know, that's what gave us Monica Lewinsky as well 2 years later. So,
I hope Biden does. I hope he stands up. I hope he makes them. If we have to shut the government down, we got to go that route. You got to defend those things. I appreciate the call, Kurt. I gotta go get out. I got one more person before the break. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Let's go to line three. We got Alice on three. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. So what I wanted to say was this. You know, we all saw what happened on January 6th, and we can see that he's also planning insurrection point 2.0. Should he be, get in there or lose or whatever. But here's the thing, Rick. You know, if we stop and think about things, this isn't the first time the Republicans have done this. Just look back at Al Gore and Bush when, you know, the Supreme Court came in and said, oh, no, we're not going to count these votes. So my whole thing is the Republican Party as a whole has been planning this type of thing of seizing power for a long time because obviously their policies are not popular with anyone except their base. So, you know, how else do you do it? And there you are.
There you go. Appreciate the thoughts, Alice.
So have a good evening, Rick.
You too. Look, at the end of the day, as I've been saying, you know, if we can't hold on to the sanctity of the ballot box, there's not much to pass on to our kids and our grandkids. If this wonderful experiment of self-governance is to work, those that we put into power have to be held accountable when they do wrong. And we really haven't done that throughout the years. Let sleeping dogs lie. The incoming administration says, never mind. You know, that's in the past. I also think it comes back to us as voters. You know, you look at what's going on in Ohio right now. The Ohio Republican Party is drunk with power. They are doing everything they can do to gerrymander and rig and to diminish the ability of voters to have a say by choosing who votes for who. I go back to, it was a couple of years ago here in Pennsylvania when Democrats got 1 million more votes and only got 5 of the 18 congressional seats. And you go, that's because there's a creative pencil involved. And maybe there's a point at which we start talking about gerrymandering in a different frame. Because I've said for years, I'm not totally opposed to the idea of gerrymandering. I would like to see it on, instead of being based on R&D, making them, as large of gaps as you can. I'd rather see them be competitive. I would like competitive districts. I think you do need to merge some rural and urban areas together where you can. I think you do need to start breaking things up to ensure that there's a mix of different ideas so that maybe we start talking about policy again. Maybe we start talking about how we make working people's lives better instead of the circus that we've gotten for the last several years. Reality is what Trump brought us was bread and circus on steroids. Fascist thought. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day Michael Siegel, business agent for New York City's Local 3 IBEW, announced the lights would be going out on Broadway for a half an hour. Electricians had been on strike for nearly a week to protest Consolidated Edison's refusal to employ union electricians for work on its new waterside plant. The company claimed it could only use members of the Brotherhood of Edison Employees, an independent union. The walkout also affected electricians at area construction sites and at 25 defense contractors across the city. The union had agreed to exempt electricians at the Brooklyn Navy Yards, where the strike held up work on four battleships. Also, the IBEW allowed electricians at Ford Instrument to return to work, given they had orders for $100 million in defense instruments. Siegel announced that at 9 p.m. the following evening, maintenance men not on strike would pull the switches on all signs in Times Square in sympathy to bring attention to their plight. After the half-hour blackout, the IBEW continued to fight injunctions brought by the New York Electrical Contractors Association. Harry Van Arnsdale Jr., business manager for Local 3, declared the blackout had been more successful than they had hoped. He characterized the switch-off as a blackout for enlightenment. Naval officials complained, however, that the strike held up vital defense projects. Newspapers noted that Broadwayites suddenly noticed the moon when the estimated 10 million watts of super lighting was turned off. A Times Square veteran noted it was the darkest since 1918 when a Zeppelin raid alarm caused a blackout. The strike was called off a week later when Con Ed acknowledged its previous agreement with the IBEW. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Senator Tom Cotton, a far-out right-winger, is to good public policy what a boll weevil is to a good cotton crop. Totally destructive. But he is politically candid. Rather than disguising his racial bigotry, for example, Tom flaunts it, as he did last month in an open letter to the retail giant Target. While the senator is usually a devoted corporate-hugging Republican, he lashed out at Target for business policies that he furiously condemns as racially discriminatory against white people. What popped Tom's cork was the chain's pledge to increase the number of black people it hires by 20%. Holy Dixieland, wailed Cotton. Hiring more of them means fewer jobs for us white people. He insisted that Caucasians had the right to take any and all of Target's jobs. Interestingly, Target's gesture to racial equality was made 3 years ago, with no peep of protest from the now-infuriated Cotton. What changed? The GOP's dog-whistling tune, the new politically correct line of anti-black racists, even parroted by today's Republican Supreme Court, is that all efforts to provide racial fairness and balance are, get this, illegal racism against the white majority. So Cotton is just scurrying aboard his party's latest anti-black bandwagon, proclaiming that whites must be protected from racial progress. Not only are Tom and his ilk threatening teachers, librarians, and local governments for promoting equality, but also brand-name corporations that they claim to be woke. That is, not solely focused on profits, but also promoting a little attention to America's need for social justice. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, Tom's clique piously claims to be devout Christians. But guess who was supremely woke? Jesus. Tom Cotton needs to review the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus declared that those who hunger and thirst for justice are blessed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, again, you know, I'm looking at these charges. And what's interesting is nearly two-thirds of people in this country are looking at these charges that Jack Smith have brought in and think they're serious, including 51% who say they're very serious. And I'm going, you know, I'm kind of surprised, almost two-thirds. That's a good number. Maybe when we see more come out, maybe we'll wake up and go, yeah, you know, trying to undo, you know, our entire, you know, democratic process, overthrow, you know, a couple hundred years of peaceful transfers of power. Yeah, that's serious. But here to share some thoughts on the charges and maybe how this is going to play out in front of us, I've asked our good friend Renato Mariotti to come talk with us. Renato is a former federal prosecutor and host of the It's Complicated podcast. You can get that wherever you get your favorite podcast. Renato, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, happy to be here, Rick.
So let's start with that number right there. Almost two-thirds, 65% think serious charges.
Yeah, it's interesting. Of course, I guess what it means maybe is that Trump's hardcore base has gone down from 40 to 35%. Is that the upshot of that number?
Could be. or it could be that there are some reachable Trump supporters who are going, you know, maybe he did go too far.
Yeah, I think that you know, one thing that has been interesting to see, Rick, is, you know, and partly because this is playing out in a presidential primary, there are more and more voices within the Republican Party that are criticizing him, which is interesting. Mike Pence is generally, despite having Trump sick his supporters on him, has been critical of him after this indictment. I mean, instead of going to criminality, he's like, "Well, this disqualifies him from being president," that sort of thing. All right, well, I'll take whatever he's willing to give us. But I think that helps because it legitimizes criticism of Trump, who is seen on that side of the aisle almost like Jesus Christ himself.
I got to tell you though, Pence's reaction and the way he's handled this all along, for me, disqualifies him from being president because he's a giant wimp. I mean, if you and your supporters wanted to hang me, I got to be honest, I think I'd be a little more forceful. I'm just spitballing.
Well, would you be more forceful than the guy whose father was accused of assassinating JFK and his wife was told she was said his, you know, Trump said his wife was ugly and he was kissing Trump's ass after that. So I don't know. I mean, that whole crew, I mean, look, they're all politicians and yeah. they all need his supporters. So they're willing to say anything.
That's crazy. So the $1 million question, you as a former federal prosecutor, maybe you've got a thought on this. Everyone wants to know, when's this going to start? Are we going to get this before the election? Does this happen before 2024 election happens? Because you saw the poll the other day said more than half of the people said they won't vote for Trump if he's convicted, if he's going to jail. Thoughts?
Yeah, so I think it's possible this happens before the election. I don't think it's a guarantee. So, you know, this Trump here is not, he doesn't have Aileen Cannon as his judge. He's got a judge who I don't think is going to be very favorable for him. She's appointed by President Obama. She's been very tough on the January 6th insurrectionists when she's sentenced them. You know, I think she's going to be pretty no nonsense and want to get this trial wrapped up quickly. That said, if this is still a complicated trial, okay, this is not like a run-of-the-mill federal case. Like, well, okay, you know, some guy had a kilo of cocaine in his trunk or he robbed a bank or something. This is complicated. Yeah. And so I think there are a lot of tools that the defense has to delay. And so it's not a slam dunk that this is going to happen before the election, you know, even if the judge wants that to happen.
Now, the charges, you as a former federal prosecutor, maybe you can explain this. We had Doug Jones, former Alabama senator, on the program yesterday. He went through, said these are the easy, probably the easier ones to go get than the seditious conspiracy and the things that I think a lot of people wanted to see. But conspiracy to defraud the U.S., conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. And the one that Doug thought was most interesting was conspiracy against rights. You got any thoughts on these charges?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, the first one I think is really, appropriate, the conspiracy to defraud the United States. It's essentially, you know, using falsehoods to try to thwart or undermine the lawful functions of government, essentially. And so, you know, here, you know, there was this fake elector scheme, for example, in which Trump was trying to essentially, you know, they had people in various states who were falsely holding themselves out to be the duly elected electors from that state, essentially disenfranchising the voters of that state. So that's straightforward, because those false certificates that they were filling out, those were falsehoods submitted to the United States Senate. There's also, you know, for example, Jeffrey Clark, who was essentially, Trump was trying to make him the acting attorney general, wanted to, use him to spread falsehoods about the election. And the DOJ's supposed investigation, which is false, there was no investigation, was wrapped up into alleged fraud that didn't, this widespread fraud that didn't exist. So definitely a lot there. The other charges, obstruction of official proceeding, I think that's fair. There's been a number of charges regarding that, regarding the obstruction of the proceeding on January 6th. The last one, yeah, I think that is interesting. What I would say about it is, Rick, the last count is very unusual to be charged in this kind of context. And it's sort of a little vague, and it's not entirely clear what Smith is trying to charge there. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it seems to me that he's basically saying, through all these same efforts that he outlines elsewhere in the indictment, that Trump disenfranchised, all these voters in different states who may or is trying to disenfranchise the voters of these different states.
But at least the obstruction ones. The obstructed the official proceeding that actually succeeded. They did obstruct the certification of the election. I mean, it was only for half a day, but that actually succeeded.
That's right. Although the focus here is not on the mob attack on the Capitol, it's more on although that was a piece of what was going on, the focus is on all of these other shenanigans, which we saw through the January 6th committee. Like, let's pressure Mike Pence to set aside the electoral votes. Let's, have these fake electors to kind of create confusion and try to throw the election. Let's pressure state legislatures to set aside their own. Remember those Michigan guys who were brought to the White House? Let's pressure them to set aside the electoral votes, throw them to Trump. So there is essentially all these different efforts and more that we didn't tell you. The Jeffrey Clark, let's write letters to Georgia on DOJ letterhead saying, we're looking into fraud. You guys should set aside your electoral votes. Like all of that, the phone call to Georgia, all of that stuff was an effort by Trump to try to overturn the results through, I wouldn't say they're non-illegal means, but it's a corrupt kind of corrupt usage of legal process, right, and other types of falsehoods that were being told.
No, and the conspiracy part is you can talk about it all you want, but there were overt acts, and we saw that. I mean, I've been asking the question, since the day after, the day we found out that there were fake electors, how come they weren't all rounded up and locked up for submitting fake forms? I mean, they were holding themselves out as something that they weren't in an official capacity to the official agency. I still can't figure out why they weren't picked up the next day.
Well, it's interesting. Michigan did indict a bunch of fake electors, and there is talk and concern, and there's these other states that have investigations going on. So stay tuned, because I actually think that was an underreported development, Rick. The Michigan electors charged with these crimes, in forgery and so forth in Michigan. Here's the thing. Guy like Trump, he's like fundraising off of this. He's worth whatever, a lot of money. You know, he doesn't give a crap at this point. He's sort of over it. But like a random Joe, county chair, GOP county chairman or mayor of a tiny town in Michigan, who put him or himself up to be in a fake elector, and now he's got to hire lawyers and is disgraced and could face his potential conviction. Like, for somebody like that, this is real. Like, there's real downside. I don't see as many people volunteering for these schemes next time.
No, I don't either. But here's the thing. And this is where my mind just, I'm struggling with how in this moment you can still support Donald Trump, because this guy has had a career of holding, of, you know, hanging people out to dry. This guy's had a career of stiffing people at every turn. And yet we see in the, you know, probably the biggest moment in U.S. history of my lifetime, he's doing it again. I mean, he's not coming to any of these people's defense.
No, I mean, and that's sort of the interesting thing. He does hold the bag, although it's interesting, though. He's gotten a little bit better about paying the legal fees and supporting the people who have the goods on him. Like Rudy Giuliani's getting his legal fees paid.
Yeah,
now.
With other people's money.
He learned from the Michael Cohen episode when Michael Cohen flipped on him. But, you know, I think, you know, all these other folks, you know, all the people who, for example, marched on the Capitol, tried to attack our Capitol and our elected representatives. He didn't pardon them. He didn't support them. He didn't pay their legal fees. That's why when he got indicted in Manhattan and in Mar-a-Lago, people weren't rioting then, right? Because they learned their lesson last time.
Well, what was it? The 1,077 people before him that were indicted and tried?
Yeah.
But let me ask you this, since you brought up Rudy Giuliani. Everyone believes he's one of the unnamed co-conspirators. There are six who were listed. Why, as a federal prosecutor, wouldn't you indict all of these people? Why do you leave these six out there? I have a thought, but I want to hear your explanation.
So typically, in a case like this, you would indict everyone together in the same indictment. Why? Well, you know, you could have the trial of everyone at the same time, so you don't have to try multiple cases. And you also can throw all the evidence in against all of them into one joint trial and do it that way. That's usually the way you do it. So why do it differently here? Well, I think what's happening is Jack Smith realizes that Aileen Cannon is going to give him nothing resembling a speedy trial in Florida, which is frankly understandable given it's a classified document case. And I think he realizes his only hope to have a trial before the election is to have a streamlined trial in D.C. And if you had a bunch of different defendants, all with their own defense teams, with their own calendars and their own interests and their own motions they want to file and their own discovery that they're going to ask for, it's just going to slow things down. So this is his attempt, in my view, to streamline the case to get it to trial.
So this isn't, you know, hoping the six rats will jump ship and turn and testify.
No, I mean, I actually think if they haven't done it already, charging them all in the same case, like, I think that's good for him. But, you know, it's interesting. We'll see what happens. You know, when he, you know, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he indicts them all separately. And then, you know, we'll see how resilient or defiant people like Jeffrey Clark are at that point.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Renato Mariotti, former federal prosecutor and host of the It's Complicated podcast, one of my favorite podcasts out there, and I hope you'll take a look at it. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find It's Complicated with our friend Renato Mariotti. I got to get your thoughts on this. Trump truth socialed that he said, my political opponent has hit me with a barrage of weak lawsuits, including DA, AG, and others, which require massive amounts of my time and money to adjudicate. Resources that would have gone into ads and rallies will now have to be spent fighting these radical left thugs in numerous courts throughout the country. I am leading in the polls, including against Crooked Joe. But this is not a level playing field. It is election interference, and the Supreme Court must intercede. Is there any world in which the Supreme Court jumps in the middle of this?
No.
So I read that whole thing for no.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, this isn't even going to get before the Supreme Court, because these cases are going to get adjudicated before they get up to the Supreme Court. He's going to have to stand trial. We're already trying to figure out, can he even go to trial before the election? So that's the probably by the time all of this gets up to the Supreme Court, you know, Donald Trump is whatever, you're going to be a much older man at that point. Realistically, none of the arguments he's making, I think, are likely to be a ground for anything. So I think we're safe. It's safe to say that, you know, there may be some legal issues here. There may be, but the legal issue is going to be like how Jack Smith is charging a particular statute in the D.C. case. Mar-a-Lago case, super straightforward.
Oh, we'll see. And finally, I got to get your thoughts on, you know, he also Truth Socialed out that he needs one more indictment to ensure his reelection. And that's on the same day when Fannie Willis says she's ready. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think he's going to get his wish if he wants to get indicted again. I think Fannie Willis is going to grant him his wish. He must have been wishing upon a star. So, yes, that's going to happen. And who knows? I mean, she may not be the last, but yeah, look, I mean, facing four indictments, that's a big deal. It is a drain on money. It is a drain on your attention. It is stressful. And I do think for people listening to this show, who are thinking like, when's Trump going to actually be held accountable? Being indicted four times is very much being held accountable. Okay. No matter what happens at the end of these, this is a serious business for him.
Well, we will see. I got to tell you, to this point, I think he's done a good job of controlling the narrative and keeping the attention on him. But I hope that our courts will treat him more as a defendant than as the media star and the cash cow that our media uses. But Renato, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Our good friend Renato Mariotti. Again, make sure you check out his podcast, the It's Complicated podcast. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that the United States and Mexico signed the Mexican Farm Labor Agreement. It became known as the Bracero Program. The word bracero can be translated into one who works with his arms and refers to farm workers. This program allowed Mexican agricultural workers to enter the United States on a temporary basis. There was a shortage of labor due to the U.S. entry into World War II. Large American farm owners were clamoring for cheap labor. By 1945, more than 100,000 Mexican migrant workers were employed through bracero contracts, mostly in western and southern states. Most were farm workers, but others labored on the railroads. The program continued until 1964. More than 4.5 million individual labor contracts with Mexican workers were awarded as part of this program. Many of these workers faced exploitation and discrimination. For example, some of the workers had to subject themselves to fumigation by DDT before they could enter the United States to work. These Mexican workers were often paid less than white workers performing the same labor, and they were often cheated out of their wages. The workers were required to work long hours under often grueling conditions. Despite this exploitation, the Bracero program did have some minimal protections for pay and working conditions for those under contract. Farm owners unwilling to meet even these low standards began to hire undocumented labor to skirt the rules. Labor organizer Ernesto Galarraza wrote a book about the program called Stranger in Our Fields. In it, he recounts a worker explaining, quote, "In this camp, we have no names. We are called only by numbers." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Trump's lead over DeSantis is growing, and for good reason. Good reason. DeSantis is a disaster. His state's a mess. But the 538 folks have put Trump over DeSantis by a 55-14 lead with GOP voters. And that's a sizable lead, especially when you look at the kind of money that DeSantis had brought in, which is why one of his major donors, the hotel guru, Robert Bigelow, has said, nope, no more money for you, cutting him off until he, quote, adopts a more moderate approach. And it's one of those things where you go, you know, he's really, you know, he's taken this, we're going to go the war on woke, this culture war thing to really a zealot level, to a religious zealot kind of level. And that's scaring the moneyed folks because he is exactly, and you know, people have been sending me these Frank Zappa clips, you know, from the 80s and 90s. And you know, when Zappa's talking about, you know, the U.S. turning into a fascistic theocracy, and you go, yeah, that's Ron DeSantis right there. Now, what's interesting is, you know, him and the do-gooder wife, evidently she raised about, I guess some $9 million in aid from Hurricane Ian. It still hasn't been spent, evidently. So, and I got to wonder, you know, what happens with this? Now, I'm not saying that she has done anything nefarious. I'm saying they raised $9 million to help people in the state. If you're going to do that, you've got to get it out because the insurance companies, they're really not. And there was an interesting story over at the Washington Post today that grabbed my attention. About this insurer, the United Property and Casualty Company, UPC. They are the ninth property insurer in Florida to go broke since 2021. They are what? The largest in the last 15 years to go broke. And it's an interesting story. I mean, you know, the reality is Hurricane Ian came and, you know, caused a whole bunch of damage. And this insurance company said, hey, you know, we'll make you whole. And they haven't. So you have all these people who have homes who are just ravaged. You know, you can't live in them because they're moldy. It's going to make you sick. And they go through all of these stories of these people who their lives are upside down because this insurance company, not bothering. Now, because they're going to be able to file bankruptcy and be done with it, they've done that. They're bankrupt now. They're out of this side of the industry. The state of Florida, which has a insurance guarantee association, they're now responsible for, I guess, almost 22,000 of these UPC claims. And, you know, they're saying who knows how long it's going to take, but it could cost as much as $600 million to the taxpayers. That's the taxpayers picking this up. And again, remember, this is one of those moments where you go, you're not going to do anything on climate change. Your policies are horrible. Your ideas are even worse. And then you do everything you can do to deregulate and don't hold these companies accountable. And then you wonder why things go belly up. Now, we all know where this story is going to go. And the reason I bring this up is very simple. Because we see this movie time and time again. There's no surprises here. It's UPC today. It could be any one of these big corporations tomorrow. Because corporate America does not care about its product. It does not. It cares about its profit. It cares about its shareholders. It cares about its executives and its CEOs. And in this case, you know, the CEO got paid. The executives lined their pocket. The shareholders made tons of money. And the article goes into all of this and just how obscene it was on how the money that should have been going into having reserves for when a hurricane hits Florida. Because, you know, it happens so infrequently that you have a huge pot of money just in case. But no, because it's not about that. It's about ensuring that you continue to make your profit goals. Now, what's interesting for me is right around the same time that the state of Florida is going to have to pick all this up, that this, you know, this UPC goes belly up, their parent company, the larger insurance company that they were part of, United Insurance Holdings Corp. Their stock price has, what was it? Has gone through the roof. I guess like 1,000% since December. Added more than $200 million to the company. They're now saying, hey, since we got away from that that homeowners insurance business, you know, since we got away from those people, our company's much more lucrative because we ended up stiffing all these homeowners. And there's part of me that goes, well, you know what? You move to Florida, you move to the deregulated, get government out of our lives state. This is what you deserve. There's part of me that says that, and it's the mean part of me. But the other part of me goes...
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media
this
app.
This is CBS News.